And I want to apologize for our late start date, but it closed back into a little longer than anticipated. Mr. Crawford, can you please lead us in the pledge?
My pleasure. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford.
You're welcome.
To all our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you will be muted for the majority of the meeting. If you would like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press star 6 on your phone. Please note that the meeting host may mute or unmute you during the meeting, and that an announcement on your phone will let you know when that happens. Thank you. There was no action in closed session to report out. Comments from board members. Mr. Davis.
None at this time.
Okay. Mr. Bone.
Yeah, I'd just like to thank Amber Watson and her team for the incredible job they've been doing feeding these kids throughout the district. I mean, they've taken on a huge, huge task, and they've done a wonderful job. So I just wanted to thank her and the rest of the team members, the bus drivers, and so I see the bus drivers driving around delivering some of the kids, some of the things, and everybody that's really stepped up and helping out. So thank you very much to everybody that's going the extra mile and helping out during these hard times.
Thank you, Ms. Allison. Mr. Allison, are you there?
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I just want to thank all the first responders and stuff, the firefighters and stuff, and the hard, difficult job they're doing. And it's almost like, it's not quite like the teachers, but the teachers, I want to thank them too, because what they're doing is really, really difficult also in a different way. And I feel the district just isn't giving them the respect in some ways that they should. We need the district to listen to what they're saying. Okay, and that's it.
Hey, Mr. Fleury.
Yes, I have a shout out. You know, we have a lot of good employees in our district, from the classified up to the top bottom back. Two of those classified have distinguished themselves for years. And this district was number one. Kim Austin was the librarian at Lynn School for 40 years, and she loved that school. I've known her all during her 40 years. She gave above and beyond for that as a librarian. Another one I would like to give a shout out to MCAA for making the list for, I believe, the 11th time in a row for being an outstanding high school in America, the list from U.S. World News Report. And it's an amazing team at the MCAA. And again, they had a secretary, Bonnie, that has been there from day one, within 41 years in the district in October when she leaves. And so we have a lot of dedicated employees and have a good team. It takes good dedicated employees regardless of their rank. You are. They all work hard, and I just want to give a shout out to all our employees, and especially these two that worked so hard in their long careers. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brunner, I want to say it looks as though your screen is. Mr. Burr, looks like your train is broken. We did. Okay. Now you're going. We didn't hear your message. If you're muted again, Mr. Fleury. Unmute yourself. Okay, now we can hear you. Thank you. Thank you.
Did you hear my message?
We did hear most of it. It was kind of broke up in some parts of it. So.
Okay.
Do you have any comments? You're muted. Trustee Scott, you're muted.
I was just like, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you.
I would just like to piggyback on Mr. Boom and Mr. Allison's comment, you know, for our school district. To our dedicated staff, and especially to the teachers during their very difficult time right now. And I know that it's difficult, but I know that we're going to all get through it. Can you believe that? So I just say to keep your heads up and just to do the best you can get all that's required. Thank you very much. And I know that it's
difficult. Thank you, Mr. Scott. Mr. Crawford.
I would just like to reiterate what everybody else said. Thank you all of our employees for all the fantastic things you do on a daily basis, and it's appreciated by your board and by your community as a whole. So all the staff, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Robert. So we're just seeming like we're getting a lot of feedback or something tonight where Mr. Williams is trying to determine where that's coming from. For the record, and I'm just going to note that all board members are present. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Maryville Unified Teachers Association. Angela?
Good evening, Mr. Rasmussen. First and foremost, the teachers union, UTA, would also like to thank our firefighters and our first responders. They did an amazing job, and they continue to do an amazing job, as always, but just because they always do it doesn't mean they shouldn't receive thanks for it. I happened to be listening in to some of the scanners that were going through the night of, and they were doing phenomenal and very quick work up there, and so much appreciated and many thanks to them for what they always do and what they continue to do. Also, we wanted to express that our thoughts and our strengths go out to all of those who were, are, and continue to be impacted by the fires. Every bit of strength and goodwill that we have are going out to all of those people, including many of our students, former students, staff members, teachers, and the like. So we wanted to make sure to acknowledge them and to thank them also for all of their hard work in getting through this and continuing to get through it. The strength and resolve that our community has always inspires me, but the strength and the fortitude that is being exhibited up in the hills is just beyond. So much appreciated and many kudos to them. On the union end of things in our communications with the district this evening, it appears to us that as much as we try to avoid being contentious, that the district appears to want really nothing less. And as much as we would like to cooperate and work with the district, we're really getting the impression that they really want nothing of the sort. For one, as I have mentioned previously, in the denial of an informal grievance, the district refused to even acknowledge that the teachers in this district are working well above and beyond 7 hours and 40 minutes in a day, which really kind of seemed to throw all of our hard work and dedication and our tireless efforts just right back in our face without so much as even a thank you. To kind of continue on along those lines, our district is now calling on our devoted special education teachers to provide one-on-one meetings or appointments to students. And in doing so, the district is placing those teachers in a very precarious position because they're asking them to do so before the district and the bargaining team have even had a chance to meet and discuss, much less agree on, the impacts and effects of those new meetings. To add insult to injury on that front, in the midst of a meeting with the directors of student services and special ed teachers Monday of last week, when a teacher asked if these one-on-one meetings were, in fact, voluntary for teachers, as was described in some paperwork, they were informed by one of the directors that, well, good teachers will do them. We're all good teachers right now. As a matter of fact, we're all great teachers. We're phenomenal teachers. And to be told by a director at the district office that good teachers will do them was insulting and offensive, to say the least. You know, I initially had other comments written up tonight, but to be really honest at this point, I feel like there is so much to say, but also at the same time so little to say, so it makes it really difficult. And the reason I say that is because the district just doesn't listen, and you, the board, follow suit, it appears. The end-all be-all at this point, to really be point-blank and to sum it all up, is that morale of educators in this district is the lowest it's been in years. And it cannot simply be blamed on distance learning. There are other issues at play as well. I have begged and pleaded with the board in the district. I've explained, I've expounded, I've clarified. We've been nice, we've been not so nice. We've tried to be really point blank, and we've tried to be a little more gentle about things, and none of it really seems to matter. No matter how we phrase it, no matter how we put it, what ends up happening is that the district, and through you, the board, the district, continue to just walk all over teachers. They continue to ignore and refuse to listen to teachers. And in the process, teachers continue to be disrespected. You have professional educators here who are working tirelessly for you. And in the process, they want to be listened to, and they want to work collaboratively with you. Instead, I would have to say that the complacency that's being put out right now, the complacency with this situation, and if we just, continue to fail to do anything about this, the district and the board's failure to listen to teachers right now, to me, borders on, complete dereliction at this point. It's not going to help. Refusing to listen to us, refusing to work with us, is not going to help. It will just continue to make us feel like we are not valued, that we are not appreciated, that we're not respected, that we're not heard. And I don't think that that's really a place that any of us want to be. I could tell you on the educator end, it's increasingly frustrating to the point of driving people to distraction. Your inability to listen and to work with us at this point in time, both on the district end and on the board end, just continues to demean us, and all it means is that our morale is going to continue to plummet even further. And so I'm here tonight to ask yet once again, for the district and the board to work with us, to trust us, to do our jobs as only we know how, and to value us for it. And this all starts with listening to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Operating engineers, local union number 3. California School Employees Association, number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
Good evening, board. So this evening, we wanted to take a few minutes just to give a little bit of thanks to in a few different places. The first thing we wanted to do is take a moment to thank all of the administrators and support staff who are working so hard behind the scenes to provide everything they can to our students and our teachers. And then out this week when I was around campuses visiting with teachers, I came across, I don't want to say a story, but something that was interesting. And so then I asked Jolie Critchfield, one of our directors, about it. And at this point, we wanted to give a shout out to Deputy LaRue and Officer Delaney, as well as the school admin staff working with Jolie. There's been over 500 home visits done at this point, trying to help get students online and get what they need in this difficult situation to learn. The other thing that we wanted to give kudos on is out of this department, one of our workers, Lori Whitmore, has helped put together an equity conversation that our district has been needing for a long time. We put out a memo or an email to teachers and district employees asking if they'd like to be involved in a conversation about equity in the district. So from race, class, and all the different things that are confronting us that become very, very apparent during these times of COVID. And almost instantaneously, we had 50 people who had volunteered to be part of this conversation and want to see us building a culture in this district, not just for our students, but for our teachers, that allow us to go on and be continually successful. So for all of the people putting in tons of hours behind the scenes, and for everyone doing everything they can for the kids of this community and the families of this community, we just as a group want to say thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Greco. The supervisory unit. Public comments. For teleconference meetings, please submit public comment card located on the district's webpage at www.mjusb.com. Under board, before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting given to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during this specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph and Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.8 states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of the legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. We do have two public comments tonight. Our first is by Mr. Dennis Kenny. Mr. Kenny, are you there? Okay, he does have, I have a statement here to read. The topic, plans for getting kids back into school. Our governor cares are not for our children to, not for our children to board members. I would hope the kids' education and well-being are of most importance, and the political game should not be used against our kids. It's time to stand up for our kids and end this tyranny against our children. If I'm not able to present the time of the meeting, could you or someone answer my concerns? So again, we can't comment on these particular items. But thank you, Mr. Kenny, for sending us your comments.
Randy, what was the first name of that?
Dennis Kenny.
What? I'm sorry, one more time.
Dennis. Dennis.
Okay,
Kenny.
Dennis. Oh, okay. Okay, it was Dennis. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Our next is Amanda Bowman. Ms. Bowman, are you there? There you are.
I am.
All right.
Thank you. I want to thank the board for the opportunity to talk with you tonight. My name is Amanda Bowman, and I'm a special education teacher at Yuba Gardens. This is the start of my 16th year. I've had the privilege of being hired by Dennis Bissell 16 years ago. He went out of his way to help and support teachers and provide guidance when asked. My next director was Toni Vernier. She did everything very differently than Mr. Bissell, but I always felt like she was doing what was best for the students and for the teachers. That office always provided information, support, and guidance. She made teachers feel like we mattered and that our hard work and effort was appreciated. This year, we have a new set of leaders, and that information coming out has been very slim. I acknowledge that the regulations and requirements are changing at a very rapid pace, but I feel very uninformed. I also feel as though my questions, requests for clarification, and any contact has been met with frustration and exasperation. The reception is not welcoming, and the door does not feel open. I feel as though I am uninformed and expected to do everything on my own without support. We have been told to use forms, but when asked to provide guidance or an example, none are forthcoming. Your special education teachers are hungry for information and guidance. Just last week, we received an email asking when we wanted to have our monthly staff meeting. This is great news, but now we are being asked to give up the precious little time we have for collaboration with our general education peers and our staff, and giving up prep time to attend the meeting. Special education teachers are required to do so much more during distance learning. I can't believe that we cannot find a way to have our special education staff meetings outside of our normal workday. Another extra that has been added to our list in the last week is that we are being asked to now work with students on a one-on-one basis without a an MOU in place. We were told in a meeting last week that if we are good teachers, we will volunteer to bring students on campus and work with them, that that's what good teachers would be doing. We would be responsible for scheduling the time, picking the students up from the car, for the health checks, for ensuring their safety while they're on campus. We have not been given any training or support. Teachers are also concerned that we haven't been given guidelines as to whom to bring onto campus to work with. There is no information on priority or recommendations for how to pick students. It has been left up to the individual teachers to break our own contract to create a plan to figure out how to balance the extra work to help our students.
Thank you, Mrs. Bowman. Thank you. That is your 3 minutes. So thank you very much for your comments. Next, we have the superintendent's report, Mr. Thiemann.
Together, serving every student every day in every way. For the 2021 school year, our collective goals are to slow the spread of COVID-19, ensure the health and safety of students and staff, maintain relationships, and facilitate student learning. At the August 25th and September 8th board meetings, we talked about implementing distance learning with fidelity, as defined by Senate Bill 98, via weekly attendance and student engagement log, and how we can make the process less cumbersome for teachers while still meeting our district's responsibilities. Starting this week, when teachers submit their attendance and engagement logs, they will be able to use electronic signatures via DocuSign, which means for teachers, no more blue ink signatures, two signatures streamlined into one, teachers no longer having to drive to school, a school site, to hand deliver documents, and simplifying documentation of weekly total instructional minutes. This service takes some pressure off teachers while maintaining the district's accountability to the state. On September 8th, we also reported that the California Department of Public Health provided guidance on August 25th permitting in-person assessments and supports for our most at-risk students, special education students, English language learners, students without access to the internet, those that are most at risk, homeless, and foster youth. Our approach has been to start small and go slow so we can grow. Exercising health and safety protocols and plans approved by Dr. Liu, staff have carried out one-on-one assessments for English learners, set up a comprehensive plan establishing centers at Dobbins and Yuba Feather Elementary Schools, allowing students to gain internet access. This plan's September 15th kickoff date has been postponed due to the fire evacuations. We empathize for the students, staff, and students who have now endured 14 days of evacuation and hope they soon receive relief from their prolonged ordeal. Slowly, teachers and staff have been meeting one-on-one in person with special education students, and we are setting up centers for our homeless, foster youth, and most at-risk students to get support. On September 11th, board members received an email sharing the news that the total number of positive COVID cases in Yuba County had dropped below 200 over 14 consecutive days. That Dr. Liu would now accept waivers. That MJUSC would start working on completing the waiver. And we would be reaching out to stakeholder groups for consultation toward submitting our waiver. The waiver process requires one district waiver representing all 13 elementary schools, grades three through six. We are planning on completing the draft content of our district's waiver soon. Have informed labor groups we will be seeking their consultation, and we'll consult with labor groups, parents, community, before finalizing the plan, sending applications to Dr. Lewis. COVID-19 has impacted everyone's lives and added extra burden. I want to thank all of our staff, students, and parents for their patience, resilience, and resolve as we all work harder together to slow the spread of COVID-19, ensure the health and safety of students and staff, maintain relationships, and facilitate student learning. Tonight's agenda helps carry our collective mission forward by asking the board to approve our district LCAP and to pass a resolution to help us refinance our COPS payments so we can continue to maximize and focus our resources toward our collective purposes and student growth. Together, serving every student, every day, in every way.
Thank you, Mr. Pena. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 9/8/20. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Was that Mr. Allison?
Yes.
And Ms. Allison, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott. You're muted, Ms. Scott. Okay, got it. Trustee Dropper.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that the board member would like to have pulled? Not hearing any, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Moving on to new business. Educational Services, Resolution 2020-21/07. Availability of textbooks and instructional materials. Purpose of the agenda item. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to approve resolution of the availability of textbooks and instructional materials for the 2021 school year. Public hearing is now open. Do we have staff that is going to speak to this, Mr. Pena?
Yes, I will be speaking tonight.
Oh, okay. Hi, Amy.
Hi. this resolution is to ensure that all of our students have all our state-adopted curriculum. At this point, all of our curriculum has been purchased. We are still in the process of moving books around where they need to be and sites requesting books and getting them out to the sites. But we do have enough textbooks for all of our students, as well as online curriculum for all of our students.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions or comments from board members? Dr. Greco, do you have anything to add?
No, just that Amy has been working with the county, and we should also have our road visits finished up probably by the middle of next week as well. So should we be all clear on Williams along with the resolution.
Okay. Okay, not hearing any questions. Any other comments from Okay, is there a motion to close the public hearing?
Paul Allison, this is a motion to close the public hearing.
Okay. Motion to close the hearing by Mr. Allison. Is there a second?
Second by Randy Davis.
Second by Randy Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison. Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Your vote. Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7-0. Now, is there a motion regarding the resolution?
Motion to approve the resolution of availability of textbooks and instructional materials. Paul Allison.
Okay. Motion to approve by Trustee Allison. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second by Rick Scott. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Yes.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7-0. Educational Services number 2, the District Learning Continuity Plan. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board to approve the District Learning Continuity and Attendance Plan, Learning Continuity Plan. We did have this last board meeting as a discussion item. Dr. Greco, is there anything you'd like to bring forward on this?
No, President Rasmussen. There's no major changes after the last round of feedback from our stakeholders. Over 90% of the stakeholders found the expenditures that we had planned to be the effective ones that we needed to have for this time. We did enact some things outside of the LCAP from the survey when it came to some of the supplemental things that we'll be doing to support folks. But in terms of the learning continuity plan, there was no major structural changes from the last time.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from board members? Not a fair motion.
Motion to approve the continuity plan.
Motion to approve, Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
A second.
Second by Mr. Scott. Okay, roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boone?
Yes.
Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7-0. Item number 3. NCAA Learning Continuity Plan. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the Marysville Charter Academy of the Arts NCAA Learning Continuity and Attendance Plan. Learning Continuity Plan. So again, we had a presentation by Mr. Malone last board meeting. Mr. Malone, is there anything else you would like to add?
No, not really. The plan hasn't changed at all. the last presentation I had.
Is there any questions or comments from board members? No, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Randy Davis.
Second by Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Bone?
Yes.
Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes. Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carried, 7 yes. Thank you, Mr. Malone.
Thank you.
Next, we have business services. Item 1, Resolution 2020-21/09, authorizing the execution and delivery of a ground lease, a lease agreement, a trust agreement, an escrow agreement, a certificate of purchase agreement, and a continuing disclosure certificate with respect to the execution and delivery of Marysville Joint Unified School District refunding certificate of participation. Authorizing the execution and delivery of such refunding certificates evidencing principles in an aggregate amount of not to exceed $36 million. Authorizing the distribution of an official statement in connection therewith and authorizing the execution of necessary documents and certificates and related actions. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution authorizing the execution and delivery of a ground lease agreement, trust agreement, escrow agreement, certificate purchase agreement, and continuing disclosure certificate, and authorizing staff to take all necessary actions for the execution and delivery of the Marysville Joint Unified School District refunding certificates of participation, Series 2020, federally taxable crossover refunding. Mrs. Lawson?
Good evening again, board members. Thank you, President Rasmussen. This is the second part of the approval process that approves all of the legal documents that allows the district to proceed with refunding its long-term debt, the certificates of participation, and that will achieve a much better interest rate, resulting in a significant reduction to the annual payment that's currently $2.8 million a year beginning in 2023.
Thank you. Are there any questions from board members or comments?
Yeah, I have a couple questions. What's the current interest rate on our COPS?
I'll defer to Mr. Financial Advisor, Mr. Eisen.
I'm going to hope that Jeff has it right in front of his face so he can say it. If not, I will pull it. Give me 2 seconds. Jeff, do you have it?
I have it right in front of my face, and the amount is 5.9%.
5.9. Okay, and then the current interest rate, we're hoping to come in around 3.19 with a cap of 5.0.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, and then if we put off starting paying the principal balance now for a couple more years, it looks like we're starting in 2023, what is the overall savings to taxpayers?
Greg, you want to take it? I'll take that.
If you have the numbers in front of you, take it.
You'll save about $475 annually to the general fund, the savings to the district, not to the taxpayer.
Okay, $475,000?
Every year. Total of about $10 million.
Okay, and then how does that equate out? It should equate out to taxpayers at the same, right?
This is going to affect your bottom line. It's not paid from property taxes.
Okay.
Yeah, this is not a typical school bond refunding where when you do the bond refi, the savings go to the taxpayers and reduces the tax rate. This is going to reduce the district's liability on how much they have to pay towards this loan that they took out years ago.
Right. Okay. So if we end up coming in at the 5% level, which is the maximum, then do we still have a savings?
It's the 5% is probably just in there as a not to exceed. We're looking, as I said, if you get up to 5%, then we're probably not going to do it. You know, probably our bogey number is probably around maybe 4%. If it's 4%, it would still maybe make sense, but then we would probably have a discussion with the administration team whether or not, hey, do we want to wait for rates maybe to come back down? But as I said, we're pretty comfortable in this 3% range. Rates haven't changed pretty much at all in the last 30 days.
Yeah, and they probably won't change for a while, especially till November. So,
correct.
Anyways, okay, thank you.
Yes.
So I was looking at one of the slides, I think, from our presentation that we did last time by Mr. Eichmann. And it looks like the interest rate, it says, on the 2020 refunding costs are estimated to be between 1.1% and 3.1%. So it sounds like different figures than what we're hearing tonight.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, when you take a look at the refunding, it probably shows a line, right? And then we have different numbers. So when you have sell different bonds or COP every single year, there's going to be different rates. And I believe Jeff gave you the blended rate.
That's correct. It's the 3.2 or 3.18% is the blended rate. Every year they came in at a different rate, a little bit different than your standard mortgage that you're waiting for.
And can the other board members hear very well? It seems like we're at a very difficult time in here. Can other board members hear the presentation or the comments?
No, I can't hear.
Really garbled.
I hear even garbling right now.
No, I can't.
Okay, so Mr. Williams, would it be better if we had all board members mute themselves right now?
Unless they're talking with the telephone.
So if you're not talking, maybe mute yourself right now, and maybe we'll see if that's going to help. I had a real hard time trying to hear what Mr. Eisen or Jeff is saying. Okay, so can you go back, Ms. Ryerson, and discuss, you talked something about blended?
Yes, so when you tip, so how, when you go into debt for bonds or even for COPs, you don't, when people say, well, what rate are you going to give me? Well, it's different because every single year you have a different interest rate, right? It's a fixed rate, but as if you're going to go down to your local bank and go get a CD, and it's like, well, I'm going to give you my money for 6 months versus a year versus 2 years. You're going to have a different interest rate. It's fixed. And the same thing goes for debt. Okay. And so when you hear a blended rate, which is all the rates combined into one from if you're going to loan your money for a year versus 30 years, the 30 year is going to have a much higher number than the lower year. And so when you combine all those rates together, that gives you the blended rate, as Jeff said, which is, I think, the 3.1 and change number. And so the presentation shows you what all the individual rates kind of are, where it shows it kind of climbing up. And so when someone were to say, well, what rate did you get, for your bond refi? And we're going to say, let's just use the number 3.17%. But what makes up that 3.1% is all these different interest rate numbers.
So are you saying that this loan will be a variable rate loan or will it be a fixed rate loan?
It's fixed. But
oh, okay.
If you're an investor and you want to buy Marysville debt, but you only want to buy year one of Marysville debt, you're going to get a very small fixed interest rate. If you're an investor and you say, well, I don't want to get paid back all my money for 20 years. You're loaning your money out for 20 years, so you're going to get a much higher rate than the person who loans it out for 1 year. So all these rates of, you know, years 1 through 20 are fixed rates, but they're just different rates. So this is how your COP currently is set up. This is how all your bonds sales have taken place and all your bond refinances take place. There's all these little different rates. They're all fixed, but they're different.
Well, when you're saying rates, okay, like my 1 year rate, that would be the interest that would be paid to me on 1 year. Now, 20 years would be my interest paid each year, all combined, added together, and that would be that rate. So, like if it was 1% the first year, I'd get 1%, but at 20 years, then I would get 20%. I mean, I'm not compounding anything here, but is that what you're saying? By
no.
Rates?
No. So if you loan your money out for 20 years, you're going to get a rate of, let's just say, 3%. If you loan your money out for 4 years, you're going to get 1%.
With length of time, the rate changes. Okay, I got you. Okay.
Anyway,
that makes sense now.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Okay, good. That was like a debt 200 course for you guys, so well done.
So I did hear earlier too, I think maybe it was Jeff's phone here, saying that the savings for the district would be 400 and something thousand per year.
475, yeah, 475 per year. And we're looking right now, rates have gone up, they've gone down. We're close to right around $10 million right now of total savings that the district would not have to make payments on.
Okay, so I was just again looking at that same slide that talked about the 1.1 and the 3.1. And here it says the annual savings are currently estimated to be $571,000 beginning in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Is that then dependent on what the interest rate is?
Correct. So if every week, we typically kind of redo the numbers to see where they are. And so savings, when we did the presentation, I don't know, you know, 3 weeks ago when we had this prepared, were lower than where they are right now. So the numbers that Jeff presented or provided of the 475, that's out. That's off of this week, Jeff?
End of last week, yeah.
End of last week. So, yeah, so rates are going to change. So while we wish we could even lock in the rates right now, there's still another 2 to 3 weeks to go before we can lock in rates. And so these rates could potentially be a little bit higher or a little bit lower. No one knows right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Any other comments or questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Oh, you'll need to unmute yourself so you can make the motion, please.
Motion to approve, Jeff.
Motion to approve by Mr. Boom. Is there a second?
Second, Fleury.
Second by Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boom.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford. You're muted now, Mr. Crawford. You'll need to unmute yourself. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, Stone, yes. Thank you, Ms. Rasmussen, and yes.
Thank you, everyone. Cross your fingers.
Next, we have business services. Item number 2, resolution 2020-21/10, temporary if temporary, inter-fund transfers pursuant to S-Code 42603. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution to establish temporary inter-fund transfers of special or restricted funds. Ms. Lofton?
Yes, the county treasurer recommended that district in the county approve this resolution just in case, with all of the cash deferrals, there could be a need in 1 month or so that a fund could be negative in cash, and then it would just borrow from another fund until, like, the revenue came in or you know, just in case. I'm thinking of MCAA, you know, when we have the fiscal year, we don't always receive revenue equally throughout the month, and just as we don't expend money equally. So just in case there was a time with these deferrals that we might need to borrow from one fund to another to cover a certain month or so. I don't really anticipate we will need it at all. It's not a bad idea to have it. It's the amount of cash deferrals that we'll be seeing.
Thank you, Ms. Lusting. Is there any questions or comments from board members?
Yeah, hey, Penny, this is Jeff Boom. If you had to do a transfer, couldn't you come to the board, you know, at the closest board meeting and request that transfer at that point rather than making a blanket temporary interfund transfer deal? And so that my issue with it is that if we start doing things like this, it doesn't hold directors accountable to their budgets. So would that, you know, is that something that we should really be entertaining, or is it something that we could look at just as, like, last year with nutritional services, they needed some help, so we took some money and gave it to them?
And that was a different type of accounting. That was actual accounting. This is just, it won't change the budget at all. It's just a matter of how we receive our cash. And, we don't always, you know, we never receive a revenue equal amount, just that we don't expend money in equal amount. This is more of an accounting issue. When we do cash balancing of every account every month. And the you may have a big payment. Say we bought, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of Chromebooks, and we made that payment right before the revenue came in that would cover more just cash flow. It's not budget. It's separate. And I would love to do a workshop on cash flow sometime if you'd like me to.
Yeah, so are we anticipating cash flow issues from the state or the federal government, or, you know, what brought this about?
Well, if you'll recall, the state is definitely going to have cash deferrals of our principal this year. Remember, it's about $26 million overall. There was a graph that had the little stack of money, and it starts in February, and it goes to the next fiscal year. And then in March, a portion of March, in April. And so what they've done is, remember, they made us whole in our budget with our revenue on the local control funding formula. Instead of that big almost 10% increase that we had anticipated when we adopted our budget, and so they, but in order to do that, they don't feel they'll have the cash to pay it. So they're telling us, your budget, we owe you the money, but you can expect that we're not going to be able to give you all the cash in this year. Because of the board being prudent and we have a solid reserve, I don't anticipate the general fund will we'll run into a negative cash issue. If we did think that, we would be doing a TRAN, you know, that tax revenue anticipation note, to borrow some money to cover. And a lot of districts are doing that. I've actually heard that there's a district that has to do two after the year. Just because we don't receive the cash for our revenue at the same time that we expend. Sometimes when that doesn't match, overall, we're short on cash. And frankly, in every district I've worked, this is a standard resolution done each year. Just in case a fund needs the cash, not that their budget is in trouble, or it's not a budget issue, cash flow is separate from that.
Penny, this is Paul. I have two questions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. One is, okay, you're saying that it really doesn't look like we're going to need to do this anyway, so why are we doing it? And the second thing is, how much money are we actually talking about per student?
So this would be a just-in-case resolution that I recommended we do, just in case one of our funds has a negative cash balance in any particular month throughout the year. And
how much per student?
It's not really calculated per student. It's just a cash in, cash out. Cash out the major.
Well, like how much?
We don't know that yet. It would be depending on what amount, you know, of deferral.
Hey, I have a bridge I want to sell you.
Penny, with the presentation that you gave on September 8th, with the way that originally in May, the governor's budget, the proposal, was cutting 8% or $8 to $10 million. This is how it would manifest for our district. But then as it went into June, the state came up with a different approach. They were able to get the CARES money, but then also deferred money. And you shared a graph at the last, and you shared it a few times, where the money is deferred. So is what you're saying that money that the state is deferring, so they're not putting it, they're not giving it to us. They're deferring it, they're giving it to us later. Like, for instance, in February of 2021, well, it says $1.5 billion, that is for us. But that allocation, they're actually going to give it to us in November of 2021. And is what you're saying that while we're waiting for that deferment, we're waiting for that money so that we can purchase what we need to purchase, not affecting budgets, but just so that we have that money, that we would be able, with this resolution, we would be able to transfer money into that account so that we could cover that month's expenses. And then the state is going to eventually give us that money. So we're seeking to do this, the resolution, rather than borrow money or debt. Do I understand the process?
Yes. Yes, that's correct. It doesn't affect our budget. We are going to get the amount of revenue that the state has said they'll pay us. They won't be giving us the cash. It's just a cash flow issue. It's an accounting. This is strictly about accounting. It doesn't affect the budget. Nobody really sees it except fiscal department.
So it looks like there's 5 deferrals that starting in February, March, April, May, and June, the state is going to defer those payments. So we won't get them that month. We'll get them in a designated month down the road. And so this is a way to make sure with a very healthy reserve, it sounds like you're saying we probably won't need it, but in the event we do, that we have this flexibility.
Right. And then we have, you know, also a charter fund that's NCAA, and they're getting the cash deferrals as well. So it could be that the general fund would have to backfill their cash for a month or so. But it doesn't mean that it's actually money on the book to them. It's just cash. It's cash flow.
Hey, Gary, thank you for explaining this and helping me understand. But I don't understand that this, you wrote right here, at this time the administration does not anticipate the need for this.
Yeah, I think Penny started off that way. We don't anticipate the need, but given all things COVID, expect the unexpected. And, you know, when you look at each month, when you go back and you look at May, and you look at, we were looking at cutting $8 million, and then you look at June, and they're deferring the money, and you know, whether CARES money is going to be available or not. I mean, if you go back and look at each month, the anxiety and the uncertainty, you know, teaches a lesson down the road that we should be prepared for anything going forward. And this would provide a flexibility or a, you know, an assurance that we have enough money at the time to pay for the.
Right. And I didn't really anticipate that there would be this many questions regarding this. So I'm perfectly happy if it's not approved this evening, and then I can do a cash flow presentation for you so that you really help you understand the cash flow at another board meeting when I have time to prepare that, if that's what you prefer.
That sounds great.
Looking at our special report on page 94, it actually states that we're only having 10 funds that we would look at being able to move money between. So it looks like it's pretty specific on where the funds money would come to and from. And I thought in our last CSBA newsletter, when they were talking about deferrals, I thought they said something about you would get, the district would get maybe 50% of their actual amounts of money for each of those months. Is that somewhat accurate, Penny?
Right. It's different percentages, and there was one of the presentations I gave previously. The graphic with the bags of money moving from one fiscal year to months received in the next fiscal year was state based on the billions of dollars of state deferrals. And I had in one of those presentations the very specific amount we expect that the district will see cash deferrals. So we don't feel the general fund is going to be in need of borrowing cash, but in case, I was thinking mostly maybe possibly Fund 9 or
okay, so sounds like we have a couple options. We could move forward, or it looks as though that we could maybe re-agendize this item and have more information if that's what the board would want to have.
Yeah, hey, Mr. Rasmussen, I got a couple more questions. Penny, before we started LCAP, LCFF, there was a deferral every year from the state. I forget what it was called. But ever since I can remember, the state's always deferred money to us. And my issue with this is if we get into spending money that we don't have, then all of a sudden we're going backwards. And then we start spending out of our savings, and we don't know how much we're going to spend out of our savings instead of cutting and living within our means. So that's the issue I have with it because, you know, once you don't get the money – and you've already spent it, then you're moving backwards and you're going to cause yourself issues. But, you know, way, way prior to LCAP, there was always deferrals from the state. I mean, as long as I can remember, if I'm not mistaken, there's always been a deferral from the state.
That, Jeff, I believe was always a one-month deferral. They're starting in February this next year. and there'll be 5 months of deferrals, and it equals about $26 million to Marysville Joint Unified.
Yeah, what was it called before LCAP when they would give you, say, you know, 92% of your budget instead of, you know, 100%? There was, you know, and then over years they kept coming
was
up
that
and up
revenue
and up
limit?
To make you whole again.
Yes.
Was that revenue limit?
Back when we had the revenue limit, they deficited. They'd say, you're getting this, but we're going to deficit it. And so then they owed us, and when times got better, we got additional funding to make up for that. This, we will be getting the money. It is not anything to do with our budget. It's just strictly cash. It's the cash flow. I'm trying to think of a good way to explain it in words without showing you the graphic again. We get $100 million a year, and they defer $26 million. Well, we're still going to have the same expenses, and we're going to get the money. It's just deferred. So in any particular month, the cash flow could be short, but it's not necessary. We don't believe the general fund that will happen. But if we did, we would be borrowing money to make up for it, even though it's not affecting our budget overall. But that would cost us money. This would be in lieu of going out and borrowing it elsewhere if we needed it. And then we'll have an updated cash flow report for you with the first interim as well.
So it would be borrowed from our reserves?
Well, cash...
From our one-time cash money?
Well, each fund has its own cash. And it fluctuates as revenues received and expenses are expended. And that, you know, we basically...
You would borrow it from another fund.
Yes, that's what this is. That's what this is. And then it would be paid back. It's just an accounting entry that would move it. And then when the cash is there, it moves back. It's not, it doesn't affect any part of the budget. For any of the funds. It's just kind of behind the scenes. That would probably be a good way of describing it, the cash flow.
Yeah, I understand it, but then you're also depending on the state that they're going to come through with that money for you. So I don't know. It's a tough decision.
We're in a better position than a lot. The other, if there were the thought that our general fund needed cash, to make it through until we receive the deferred payments, we would be asking you to do some borrowing. But this is a much simpler, easier, just in case. No cost. There's no cost to this. And it's just simply there in case we need it, in case NCAA is short, you know, if they're short $500 in a month or so forth.
Yeah, and you said other districts that you've worked with or work for, you guys have always done this. In 18 years I've been on this board, I've never seen this in this district.
Yeah. That's what Jennifer Pasalia had said. It's not a routine here. Not routinely done.
And unprecedented times. And with this deferral, you know, I just go back again to May and June and the difference there is, you know, 5 deferred payments, that's a lot of, and they're 1, 2, 3, they're all in consecutive months. Now they are received in consecutive months, you know, on the other side. But it's a different time, a different circumstance, a different challenge.
How is it different times, different circumstances when it's been done in these other districts, but we've never done it?
No. I'm sorry. I mean, in terms of the amount of deferral payments, that there's 5 months in a row, and in from February through June, every month that payment is deferred to a later month. So the state's saying, we're going to pay it, but we're going to pay you down the road. And so when they don't pay us now, it's not just us. It's districts, you know, throughout the state. And so, you know, having tools to handle that, that's what this is.
So, yeah, I understand. I understand that, but the state's deferred funding to us for 18 years that I've been on this board. They've always deferred funding to us, and we've never done this. And, you know, I understand the concept behind it, but on the other hand, when you start spending money that you don't have, then the state doesn't come through, then you start putting yourself in a bind is what I'm looking at. Penny, is there a chance that you can cause yourself an issue because the state all of a sudden doesn't come through with the funding?
You know, this is much simpler. You're thinking of a much bigger problem that we would have. This is just simply for within the year cash flow, being able to borrow from one fund to the other. It was recommended by the county treasurer for every district to adopt just in case it's needed. It's not about the state not paying us. If that happens, then all the districts are going to be in a lot of trouble.
So, Penny, on page 94, where it has those 10 different funds, can you give us an example of maybe what we would be looking at there? Would we borrow money from the general fund to pay cafeteria funds, or can you give us an example? Because also it looks like in this resolution, it talks about amounts transferred shall be repaid either in the same fiscal year or in the following fiscal year. So it seems like the fund, if something is borrowed, it says it has to be repaid either that year or the next year.
Right. That's true. That's how the interfund transfer borrowing, you're just temporarily balancing your checkbook so that it's not negative. And then when the money comes in, it gets repaid. It's really as simple as that.
So would this be an example if we did a cafeteria fund and needed more money out of the general fund? We gave $100 to the cafeteria fund, and then that same year that the cafeteria fund was paid back $100 to the general fund?
Right. That's correct, but it doesn't change the budget. It's just a matter of when the money's received and when it's expended. And if you expend more before you get it, your revenue, then you're going to have a cash shortfall. So this allows another fund to take care of that for the county treasurer to say, okay, overall, you've got all this cash. If this one's short, say fund 13 was short for a month, then you're going to be fine because you've got, you know, funds in the money in the other funds to cover it. It's just the cash behind the scenes.
Okay, is there any other questions? I might go back and ask that again earlier than I did. Are board members ready to make a decision on this, or would you like to maybe bring this back at another date with a more in-depth presentation?
I'd like to bring it back.
Okay.
So don't we need to make a motion to table it and bring it back later?
Yes, I think we would. I just wanted to see if that was some of the sense that maybe the board would like.
This is Paul. I move that we put this on the table and temporarily hold it and bring it back at a later time and discuss it in more depth.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Allison to bring this item back for more presentation. Is there a second?
I'll second that. This is Susan Scott.
Okay, second by Ms. Scott. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
No.
Trustee Moe?
Yes.
Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
No.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Dropper?
No.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carried. 1, 2, 3, 4, yes. 3, no. So this will be, maybe we can re-agendize this for our next board meeting. Thank you. Next, we have business services, mitigation agreement, or number 3, mitigation agreement with Habitat for Humanity. Purpose of the agenda, this item is for the board to hear Habitat for Humanity's request for revision to the term of its mitigation agreement pertaining to the Sierra Vista Subdivision, PSCM 2002-599. We have Ms. Blossing there for...
Yes, I'd like to introduce Mr. Nicoletti, representing Habitat for Humanity. He'd like to speak to the board.
Hi, Mr. Nicoletti.
Hey. Good evening, trustees. It's always a little nerve-wracking coming up right after a split vote, but I'm going to go for it. So I've got to kind of explain Habitat for Humanity in this particular deal to you. We're facing a potential increase in fees, and I've got to talk about how that affects this particular project. Habitat for Humanity is a mortgage lender, and to do a deal really in affordable housing for the kinds of needs of the families that we serve in this county, it is, especially in the state of California, can be very complex. So in this particular arrangement out at Sierra Vista, we have a partnership with USDA. USDA carries a mortgage loan. Habitat for Humanity does the construction loan on that piece. The typical people that are getting loans that fit into this bracket are hovering around 50% of the average median income in our particular region, in Yuba County. And so if you are a checker at Food Max and your spouse is working as a landscaper, you're going to qualify for this house that is being appraised at $300,000, but you're not going to pay $300,000. As you make your regular payments, we'll be forgiving about $100,000 worth of that. So we accelerate equity. We really help families find stability because they're in a home for those 20 years and they stay in the school district. Education improves because they are not moving from couch to couch and living in uncertainty. Their health improves, and at the end of that 20 years, they are clearly at a different level for demographics, and it absolutely adds to the local community every time we get a successful arrangement with a house. So here's what happened in this particular project. This was a Mercy Housing project. It was created during the boom in the early 2000s. Everything was bought at very high prices because we knew money was flowing everywhere. And then as the collapse came in 2008, so did Mercy Housing. When they tried to sell off some of these lots, the organization known as CHIP and the organization known as Habitat for Humanity, the center, stepped in to begin negotiations. Actually, that was a different type of a world that I was in at the time. I was on the board at the county of Yuba, and we could see that it was impossible to pay those elevated prices. So a couple of things happened. One, we helped negotiate to get the price for per lot cut in half, which helped out Habitat a lot. but the County of Yuba also stepped up. They have impact fees, and in this case, it were $4,800 for parks, $6,600 for traffic, so a little over $11,000 per dwelling was a fee associated with the County of Yuba, which we voted at Yuba to reduce those and remove those actually from this particular project. Those changes made it possible for families to fit into those contracts. Now with USDA, it's added some dilemma because we've had actually a couple of government shutdowns since 2016, and that freezes USDA solid. Those people have to put their phones on the desk and walk out of the office. There is no interaction, even no matter where we're at in the construction process. So we have hit a few walls with people that have performed services. We've ordered, you know, construction materials, and suddenly all of us out here at the edges get really impacted in order to get back into the flow of financial, you know, processes through the federal government. So the USDA contracts are very fixed. They are not flexible whatsoever. And at this point, with the 10 remaining homes of the original 36 lots that we went into, those families are already signed and contracted. So there's going to be zero movement for the count for the county because they've already made their commitment. But for USDA, there'll be zero budge. And for those families that have signed contracts, there'll be zero budge. So that leaves this at the feet of Habitat for Humanity. So I'm really representing Habitat's interest in this because there's nowhere to take this out of. We, in order to make this work for these families, there's a variety of processes we go through to get to a finished product. So the impact fees that we're talking about for schools will have changed in the process from a little over $3.50, and Penny may have to help me with this, from around 2017 through current. It's about $4.85, and I think the latest jump goes over $5 per square foot for school fees. And that jump adds up to thousands. As you guys see, this large budget you manage, adds up very quickly and impacts us very quickly. Our ask for you to consider is to simply hang in there with these last 10 lots we have. Let us get these families set. And then as we go into future projects in Yuba County, we can factor from the very beginning the current school fees and these adjustments and just sort of finish them out. And I'll also mention that Linda Water had regulations change. We now, in the process between 2016 and today, all houses today are built with a fire sprinkler system. It's just built in. So when this subdivision was first contemplated, they had a 3-inch main cutting into the house, but when you add fire sprinkler system, you now need a 4-inch hookup. And so Linda Water wanted to let Habitat know they were going to be raising fees per unit, and that would have been about a $90,000 impact on their change. Their board chose to let this subdivision finish. Let us factor that into future values, future prices, and then it was just a stay. And other developers in the area asked for the same and did not receive it, mainly because they weren't building affordable housing. And that's really the story here. Seeing these families, many of them single parents, staying in the homes. We have two families right now that we brought in this year that are families that went from homelessness to home ownership. It has fired us up and made our commitment that much stronger to help these folks. But there aren't a lot of options for people in this category. They just aren't going to find a deal like that. And currently in Yuba, there's very, very little activity on the affordable housing ownership front. And so we think that these have a very special value at the time, and they're they're able to work well for families. So that's it. I'm just hoping that we can get a consideration to study and to see if we could let this project finish as it started, keep the original fees where they were, let's just factor all that stuff into the next round when we start building in new subdivisions or new single home construction sites. Thank you.
So, Mr. McLennan, I think I heard you say that you're looking at there's 36 lots that still need to be finished or started, 36?
No, the original purchase was 36, and we're down to our last 10. So we're talking about these 10 lots, not the ones that were already built.
Okay, so 26 are completed, and you're looking at 10 lots for this. Any other comments or questions by board members?
Yeah, this is Jeff. Hey, John, Mr. Nicoletti, hey, thank you so much for everything.
Thank you so much.
Oops, I'm getting a lot of feedback. Anyways, you've been, you know, a great supporter for years and years. Is everybody getting that feedback that I'm getting?
Yeah, we're getting it.
Are you still getting it?
Try again, Jeff.
Okay. John, thank you for everything you've done for the, you know, the community for all these years. I appreciate, you know, all your hard work. Going back to the 20-year deal, can you explain that again? I didn't quite understand what you said. If a family buys a home, they're committed for a 20-year period?
Yeah, that's the length of our mortgage, Jeff. And so we forgive 5% of their mortgage payment each month if they make a payment and stay on schedule. That is specifically built in because we don't want them to flip a house or rent it out. We want them to become in a paid off home, and it's a 20-year plan to do that. So just over their 20 years of making their mortgage payment, which we do at 0% interest, USDA, I think, is at 1%. And so it kind of depends on the family's total income. But we always keep them at 0%.
Okay. Thank you, John.
I, too, Mr. McLennan, would like to thank you for everything that you do for our community. Thank you very much.
Hey, I appreciate that. It's really nice to be home with the school district. It's always good. I've only been a student here since 1968, but love our school.
Thank you. Move on to the next item.
So is this an informational item?
Right.
We'll, there's no action or decision tonight, but staff will prepare a staff report bring to the board for decision in a future board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Dana. Okay, personnel services, number one, superintendent employee contract extension. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve to extend the superintendent's contract to a total of 4 years, ending in 6/30/23. The background. According to Article 1, the superintendent's contract signed on 6/25/19, if the superintendent receives an evaluation for the 2019-20 school year of progressing acceptably or better overall, this term shall be extended to the total of 4 years, ending in 6/30/23. The superintendent receives an evaluation from the board for the 2019-20 school year of progressing acceptably on 6/16/20. So this is in accordance with Mr. Cena's contract. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, this is Paul. You guys have heard my arguments earlier, and I think Gary's done a great job, but I think it's unfair to him to to sit there and say that, yeah, you've done a great job, because of the COVID-19 thing, there are so many things that he has not done that he told us that he would do during his interviews, his early interviews. So I think it would behoove him to just give him a one-year contract, and I know we can't do that, but I just want you to understand why I'm voting the way I'm going to vote.
Okay, thank you. We'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Fleury. Is there a second?
Second. By Randy Burgess.
Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Bone?
No.
Trustee Allison?
Nay.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott? Trustee Crawford? You're muted, Mr. Crawford. Trustee Crawford? Maybe give a thumbs up. Or...
Who keeps muting me? Yes.
I don't know.
Yes. My answer is yes.
Okay. Thank you. Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 5 yes, 2 no. We do have a closing by Mr. Fleury. Go ahead there, Mr. Fleury.
Yes, I would like to close this board meeting in memory of Marilyn Graham. She passed away on 10/21/20. She worked for many years at Cedar Lane, almost 30 years, as an instructional assistant in the library, and she was beloved by the students and the community there. When I worked my last year on beaches, I used to see her and her husband, Don. They were living right at the last ranch that I had, and they would walk across the highway hand in hand, back and forth, and it was just neat to see, and I'd stop and talk to them, and you could see the love they had for each other. Don also was a teacher at Endress High School for many years, so I'd like to close it. Meaning in memory of Marilyn Graham. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fleury. Oh, go ahead there, Mr. McGlenn.
Yeah, thank you for letting me impose. I did want to extend before the evening's out, if any of the board members would like to individually tour this subdivision, I'd be more than happy to do that. If you'd like to arrange through Gary, to get a hold of me, I'd be really delighted to show you exactly what this project is all about. That's it.
Thank you. Anything else for tonight's meeting? We didn't care.